I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Tonight I'm joined by George, and George is a returning guest to the podcast. He came on previously to talk about the Valentich mystery, which is one of Australia's biggest UFO mysteries. And because George came on the show, one of our listeners has actually given us a little bit more information potentially relating to this case. So I thought it was a really, really good opportunity to get George back on to kind of give us a bit of an update on what's happening with this case and the new information that has kind of been brought to light, and maybe how we can maybe reach out to our audience to get a little bit more from them, because you just never know where these threads really go. So George, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thank you. I like having the opportunity. It's very good.
Yeah, mate, it's a pleasure to have you back. It's been a little bit of a mission purely because of me and my schedule, and nothing was going to hold you back from coming on today, even some hernia operations that put you out of action yesterday.
Yeah. Well, you've got to get these little maintenance jobs done, you know. That's what it is. Yep. So they're all good, yeah.
Firing on all cylinders.
Painkillers help, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, mate, what was the give us the rundown on what happened here. So you came on the podcast, a listener reached out to me, and I kind of gave him your details to get in touch with you. I'll kind of give the floor to you.
Was that Sarah?
It was. I believe it was Sarah, yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Gave us that info.
Sarah sent me an email, and she said, I heard you on the podcast on the Believe podcast. She said that I went to school in Coonabarabran, and she said I grew up there, and her dad still lives there. Her mother unfortunately died, and the tragedy of that is that her mother knew everybody. So her mother would have been the person to ask, but you know, her mother died a few years ago, unfortunately. But her dad, she asked her dad, and her dad is still trying to think if he is familiar with any names that we were able to get. But just backtracking a bit, people know about the Valentich case. We talked about the plane disappearing and all of that stuff. But many years later, Bill Chalker was doing some investigating in Coonabarabran. There was a lot of sighting cases being investigated. And he went there, and almost everybody he spoke to said, you've got to go to the general store or hardware store and see the guy who works there. He's like, Laurie, you've got to go and talk to him. And this is where the story gets kind of weird, because what Laurie did was he was aware of the fact that in Coonabarabran, it's a pretty active UFO active area, and he was interested in the subject. So he would ask all of his retail customers, had they ever had a UFO sighting? And if they said yes, he would take notes. And so he had all these journals of local UFO reports from Coonabarabran. And, you know, Bill, none of the UFO researchers knew about this, but all of the people around Coonabarabran said, you've got to go talk to Laurie, you've got to go talk to Laurie. So Bill and his mate, Rob Chilley, went up there, and it's a really long drive from Sydney to Coonabarabran, like it's a whole day kind of thing. And Bill said, oh, yeah, they were in this rickety old VW Combi, and he said that he thought they were never going to get there. But, it, you know, the things you do for research, you know, the tragedies, you know, all the potential tragedies you've got to get through to get anything done. Anyway, they got up there, and they eventually went and saw this guy, Laurie. Bill actually rang him first before he went up there. He said, look, I'm going to come up and see you. And I have a tape recording of that phone conversation too. Interesting. But Bill had a little tape recorder with him and his friend Rob, and they interviewed Laurie. And Laurie said, look, yeah, he's got all these dozens and dozens of UFO sightings cases. But he said, look, but the most interesting one of them, the whole lot of the sightings he ever recorded from people, was a farmer who'd come up from, he used to live in Murray Bridge, south, near Adelaide, Murray Bridge. And he'd moved up to Coonabarabran and moved in there, and he came into the hardware store to get something. And he described how one day, it was the day after Fred went missing, the very next morning. So Fred went missing on the Saturday evening, heading down to King Island. But the next morning in Murray Bridge, this farmer saw this huge craft hovering above him. He said it was about 30 metres in diameter. He said 90 feet. Well, that's about 30 metres.
Yeah.
You know, huge thing. And he thought it was in trouble because it was making a horrible screeching noise. He thought he had trouble with his equipment, but it was actually, he just uncoupled it, but the noise continued and he couldn't work out what was happening. So I think we might have covered this part of this in the previous one.
Yeah, just a little bit we did, but it's still good to go over because there may be people who are relatively new, and this is one of the most fascinating aspects of the of this whole mystery, because I remember reading it in your book and my jaw literally dropped when I got to this, this chapter of it.
It is quite weird, isn't it? It's a very weird story. I mean, for a UFO story, first of all, the Valenti's case is unique in that you have a pilot flying a plane and describing that this thing is chasing him, and he can't describe what it is. He tries to describe it, but he can't come up with what is it. You know, and if you look at the photo on the cover of the book, Nothing on Radar, the Valenti's mystery, that photo was taken just before Fred flew into that area. That object is a very strange-looking object. The photo shows characteristics that are compliant with some of the new theoretical physics about some kind of new propulsion systems that would generate these little, would ionize the air around the craft. And these are little blue sparkles of ionized air around the craft in the photo. And that's on the cover of the book. So that's interesting because, like, our physicists are just catching up to the theory about it. We still can't do it, but that's interesting. Anyway, so it gets weirder and weirder. First, pilot describes he's being buzzed by this thing. It's annoying him, and then he disappears. They don't find anything. But because of what happened the next day, through this story that came from the farmer who moved up to Coonabarabran from South Australia, or from Murray Bridge, he said that he thought this object was going to drop and fall on him, so he ran to the side to get clear of it in case it came down. And it was making this horrible noise. It was a large saucer just hovering above him. And he said, when he got to the side clear of it, he could tell that it had a dome on top, and he could see a doorway. And he said, like a church door, an arched doorway, like a church door. He said there was no handle, and there were no just a doorway, it looked like, sort of on the side. He said it looked like it had a rubber weather seal around the base of the dome, like a black strip, like a weather strip. That was one of the details. There's a lot of other details. Laurie went into a lot of detail. And the entire audio has, people have put it up on YouTube. You can hear Laurie talking about this. But now, that's weird enough. Now, Laurie describes the farmer coming to the shop and telling him about this UFO case, only because Laurie asked him, have you ever seen a UFO? And so he told him the story about seeing this thing down in Adelaide many years before, but it was the day after Fred went missing. So it seems that the day after Fred went missing, his plane was seen again. It had vanished, but it was seen, but it, down at Murray Bridge. Okay? That's kind of strange, but it gets even stranger because when the farmer was standing there looking at this object, it was slowly rotating. And something came into view, and it would have looked like a cross stuck to the side of this flying saucer. It was an entire Cessna aircraft stuck to the outside. The wings were flat against the side of it. The tail was hanging down. The engine was at the top. The wheels were sticking out. There was oil running down the outside of this Cessna, and it wasn't running. It was just stuck there. He even said the farmer looked to see if there was any ropes or chains holding it on. He couldn't work out why it was just sitting there. But he could see the registration number on the wing, so he scratched it into his tractor with a nail so that he wouldn't forget the number. And it was the number that corresponded with Fred's plane. It was VHDS Joe.
Wow.
Delta Sierra Juliet. And it was the day after he'd gone missing. And it was making this horrible screeching noise, and it flew off. Over towards the, there was an army base. There is an army base down there at Murray Bridge, and we have verified with the army that there was military exercises going on that day. So there's a bit of confirmation about that. Excuse me, right? Bit of a cough there. So anyway, this was strange enough. But now, what's happened is, I've got to tell a little bit of a backstory. About 15 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago, I was invited to go to a UFO conference in New South Wales. And I hadn't been to a conference in New South Wales before that. And I was asked to give a bit of a talk about Victorian cases because I was running the Australian UFO Research Network Victoria branch at the time. I'd been doing it a few years and I had quite a few interesting little UFO cases that I had been asked to investigate, like that had been sent to me, and I'd spoken to these witnesses, and I had some very, very good cases and intriguing little UFO stories. And the people of New South Wales would never have come across them because I'd investigated them and they hadn't been published or anything. So I went up there and it was great. This conference was fantastic. I met a whole lot of really interesting people and a lot of other researchers, and I had a ball, you know, and I had a good time too, giving my talk. I had a little bit of a sort of a PowerPoint presentation and stuff. And I really enjoyed myself. It was great. Now, there was about 200 people at this conference. And I remember thinking that, oh, yeah, I'll be all right. But, you know, I thought, oh, I might be a little bit nervous talking to these people, but I'll be okay, you know. Anyway, I came back from this conference and there's this barbecue. One afternoon, I'm invited to this barbecue in Camberwell. And there's a few people that went to the UFO meetings in those days, having this barbecue at their home. And there was a few UFO researchers there. And I went along. One of them was Brenda Butler. She has been running a support group for contactees, for people that have had abduction experiences and stuff. She's been running that for about 30 years or more. A lovely lady. Brenda Butler. Anyway, she had a little gadget with her. This little gadget was a little Sony Walkman cassette deck, but it was a unique one. Well, it had record, so you could actually just tape record sound with it. It wasn't just a playback one for when you're taking the dog for a walk to listen to your favourite cassette.
You could have a blank cassette. A bit of a road trip down there going to the cassette days, mate.
Yeah. Well, they're coming back. You know, a lot of people still use them. Tapes, you know. Anyway, this thing had a record button, so you could record people, record a conversation or whatever. But it had another unique feature. In playback mode, you could select forward or reverse playback. Now, that's interesting.
That is interesting.
And why would that be interesting? Well, because we've all heard, you know, about these songs where these heavy metal bands would have these satanic messages hidden in the songs.
Yeah, yeah.
That would make people go and commit suicide and things like that. There was a law case about it, wasn't there? Some band was accused of creating a menace in society where kids were suiciding because they've been listening to this heavy metal music. And when they played the music backwards, there's all these horrible messages. Well, anyway, this explains that. What we've discovered explains that. Now, Brenda said, let's try it out, George, here. And she put the microphone right into my mouth, under my face, and said, here, say something. And I was right on the spot, and there's all these UFO researchers in the backyard, you know, and it was this beautiful sunny day. And I just said, well, okay, look, I just went to a UFO conference in New South Wales, had a really good time, met a lot of researchers, and I gave a talk about Victorian cases. I had a really good time. It was great. And that's all I said. Something like that. But as I was saying that I gave a talk about Victorian cases, a different thought went through my mind, but I didn't say it. The thought that went through my mind was, I thought I was going to be nervous. But I didn't say that. I just said, yeah, I had a really good time. I gave my talk and everything. And when we reversed the tape, there was a lot of gobbledygook speech just backwards. It didn't make any sense. But you could clearly hear me say, I thought I would be nervous. It came out clearly. And I thought, hang on, you guys. I'm going, what? I didn't say that. It was only a thought while I was talking. It was a thought in my mind. But it came out when we played the tape backwards. Now, that is insane.
That is insane. What goes through your mind when you've just experienced something like that? Because for me, I always thought the reverse messages or music and things like that was all just this kind of buzz thing in kind of the zeitgeist, in popular culture. But you've done something here that wasn't reverse. It wasn't your words backwards. It was your thoughts played back in reverse.
My thoughts came out forwards when they were played backwards.
Yeah.
Did I think it backwards? I wasn't aware of it. But just think about it for a minute. Your mind is a language center. You have thoughts in your mind. And when your vocal cords are running and you're making sounds, so they're being projected like Bluetooth through airwaves and other people can pick it up. That in itself is a miracle, really. It's like technology. But the thing was, think about your vision. Your brain sees everything up the right way, but the eyes are actually upside down.
Yep.
The vision in the back of your eye is actually upside down, but your brain turns it around. I can't understand how this works, but it clearly said, I thought I would be nervous. I've actually contacted Brenda recently, and I said, look, have you still got that tape deck? She said, yeah, I've still got it. Have you still got the tape? She said, yeah. She said, they're at her daughter's place. I said, oh, look, please, I've got to get that tape from you. I've just got to make a copy of that bit when you got me to say that so yeah. I can show people. But look, I have some samples of some reversals that we can listen to tonight. I don't know if I play them here, you'll be able to hear them.
Well, what we'll do is we probably won't be able to hear them if you play them, but if you send them to me, I'll be able to insert them into the episode. Yeah. And I could do that.
In the chat bit, I could do them here. You'll be able to insert them. Look, they're not very long, and they're very, very, you'll hear very clearly, and they're fascinating things. What happened was, I got Bill Chalker to give me a copy of his interview with Laurie Ryder in Coonabarabran. Now, there's three different people that Laurie talks about, but he doesn't say the name, and you can't investigate a case, you can't do anything if you don't have a name to go by. So I really, this was years ago, and I did know about this when I started writing the book, but I couldn't put it in the book because nothing was verified. But I'll explain that in a minute. But what happened was, using logic, I just thought, now look, the point where Laurie was most likely to mention the farmer's name was the point on the recording where he's describing the guy but not saying the name. So I found that part of the tape and I played it backwards. Straight away, a name popped up. It was very clear.
That's unbelievable.
And what Laurie was saying in forwards motion, what Laurie was heard to be saying, he's describing this guy. He said, it's right at the beginning. He says, well, the most interesting one of the lot is this farmer. He came into the shop. He came up to the shop and he got off his little motorbike. He was riding a little ag bike. And he says, brr, brr, you know, they look like little sewing machines. And he got off his motorbike and he came into the shop. So he's just describing, but he's not saying the name. And where he says he came into the shop and he, just that section, reversed, says Ian Bryson.
You're joking.
Ian Bryson. And I, on the tape, I've slowed it down and then slowed it down. It says Ian Bryson, Ian Bryson, Ian Bryson. You can hear it very clearly. It is unbelievable. And so we have found, by reversing that tape, we have accessed the inner thoughts of a guy who died about 20 years ago. It's insane, but it's the same thing that happened to me when I was at the barbecue.
Do you have access to that audio?
I've got, that's the clip I wanted to play for you to
excellent,
be able to play.
Excellent. Well, what I'll do is I'll insert it right here into the episode. So
yeah.
if anyone's watching or listening this is the point where that will play.
Well, the most interesting one of the lot is this farmer that came into the shop and he pulled up outside on one of these little ag bikes, you know, brrr, like sewing machines, and into the shop and he in it,
I've tried to find this Ian Bryson now, and I haven't been able to verify it, so I didn't put it in the book, all right? But recently, last August, I did this TV program. I was invited to do this thing for Channel 7 about the Lentich case, and it was before I'd even put the book out too. That was a lost opportunity to get it out there. But anyway, I was interviewed for 3 hours and I mentioned Laurie Ryder in that interview. So because it was coming on TV and I hadn't seen the episode yet, I texted Laurie's son, Lance. Now, Lance doesn't live in Coonabarabran anymore, but I have spoken to him in the past and I've asked Lance, do you remember your dad talking about this farmer down in Adelaide who had a UFO with an airplane stuck on it? And he said he didn't know anything about it. He never used to pay much attention to his dad and his funny stories kind of thing. You know, he was a young kid then and he didn't pay much attention. But I texted him and I said to him, look, I think that I did mention your dad. And so it could be on TV. We might be talking about your dad on TV tonight. I said, oh, I'll have a look. And it was on one of those Channel 7, one of those digital Channel 7 channels. And it was called Close Encounters Down Under, that series that was on about 6 weeks ago.
Yep.
And I was in episode 2, rushed home from work because I had to work that night, just rushed home to be able to get it on the hard drive and record it. Had to buy a new hard drive recorder to even get it because the old one broke down. Anyway, so he texts me straight after the show and says, they didn't say anything about the airplane scene on the ground at Murray Bridge later in the day. They didn't even talk about that. I said, no, they didn't. And then I said to him, I texted him back and I said, hey, listen, on the tape, it sounds like your dad said the name Ian Bryson, right, was the farmer. And he goes, oh, yeah, Ian was a friend of my dad's. Yeah, that was a friend of my dad's went by that name, he said.
Wow.
He said he was a farmer up here. My dad knew him really well. He said, I even knew him too. Our kids played together. And he said, I even bought a car off him.
Wow.
And then he said, and I think he's the guy you're looking for.
That's unreal. So not only did you get the name from the tape, but you've essentially got first-hand knowledge being passed to you of...
From the son of the guy on the tape.
Yeah.
That he knew the bloke as well, and he was called Ian Bryson, and he was up there at Coonabarabran, but he had come from down south somewhere, but he didn't know exactly where, but it was from Murray Bridge. So we've got confirmation of the name. Now, Ian Bryson could be alive. It was a long time ago, 45 years ago this year. I mean, Ian could be long gone. Things happen to people. They have accidents. They get killed. They just die of old age. He could be in a nursing home. I don't know. I don't know enough people in Coonabarabran. Now, this lady has helped me, this Sarah Lockwood, who you got me in contact with, or she got in contact with me. But we haven't been able to. Her father can't remember the name. Ian Bryson doesn't ring any bells with him. But somebody at Coonabarabran might remember it. But he'd come up from down south somewhere and moved into Coonabarabran. I don't know how long he stayed, but Lance told me that he lived in a place called Three Hills, which is just a little bit out of town from Coonabarabran, Three Hills. He said there was a lot of bushfires about 10 years ago that went through there, and he wasn't sure, but he thought Ian Bryson's house could have burned down. You know, he could have died in the fires or something. We just don't know. We don't know what became of Ian Bryson, or he could still be alive. We don't know. It's really hard to investigate, really. At least we've got confirmation of the name.
Yeah.
But it's all so long ago that it might be just, it might not amount to anything anyway, but at least we know. Okay, now there's another guy on the tape that Laurie talks about but doesn't say the name.
And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
Sort of part two of this weird story about seeing the UFO with the plane stuck on it. Part two is that this farmer, Ian Bryson, went into town that afternoon for whatever reason. He went into town and a neighbour saw him and said, "Oh, I see you're doing a bit of crop spreading. Some more crop spreading." And I think he meant crop dusting, because all the farmers do their own crop dusting. You know, they hire a plane, they do the crop dusting, and then they don't have to own the aeroplane. Anyway, Ian says, "No." And so the neighbour says to him, "Well, what's the Cessna doing in your top paddock?" Now, this is one of the strangest conversations I've ever heard of. These two guys are talking. One says, "What's the Cessna doing in your top paddock?" He says, "There's no Cessna in my top paddock." The guy says, "Yes, there is. I was down there this morning and I seen it."
This sounds just like a typical old bloke conversation.
It's just so funny. "There's no Cessna in my top paddock." He says, "Well, that's strange." So he went home. He said, "Well, I'll check it out when I get home." And he had several locked gates he had to get through to get up to the top area where they have the landing strips where they do their crop dusting from. He said, and there was no aeroplane there, but there was tire marks in the grass. And he followed these tire marks, and at the end there was a pool of sump oil on the ground.
How weird.
And that's the end of the lorry rider story about that particular case, right? So that leads you to the question, well, what the hell went on there? I mean, the farmer saw the thing fly away with the plane still stuck on it, and it went over towards the army base. But then his neighbour says to him, "Yeah, look, what's the Cessna doing in your top paddock?" All right? Pretty bizarre. Well, anyway, I thought, now, he's describing another guy here and not telling us the name. I wonder who this was. So I've got the tape. I'm just using Audacity. You know, you can highlight an area and just hit reverse and then play it backwards, you know, and Audacity's magic. So anyway, I've got this where he says about the Cessna being in the top paddock. So he says, so what's the Cessna doing in the top paddock? So he says, I see you're doing some more crop spreading. And he goes, no. He says, well, what's the Cessna doing in your top paddock? Play that backwards. And he says, that's Phil Wilson. That's Phil Wilson. Comes out clearly. That's Phil Wilson.
He said, no. He said, what's the Cessna doing up in your top paddock? He said, what's that? What's wrong with you? 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 What's wrong with you?
Now, I thought, well, he must have had a neighbour called Phil Wilson. So I Googled the name Phil Wilson of South Australia or of Murray Bridge. Guess what comes up? Father Phil Wilson, Catholic priest at Murray Bridge. Whoa. At that time, in that era, Phil Wilson, he went on to become the Archbishop, possibly of Australia or of South Australia or whatever. He was the Archbishop eventually. Now, towards the end of his career, somebody who was one of the other priests in the area was accused of a bit of kiddie fiddling with the altar boys and stuff. And so there was a lot of controversy about that, and he had to stand down. He thought he was standing down in supporting. I don't know. I think he was accused of covering up the fact that this was going on. He didn't do enough about it, so he was in a bit of trouble at the end of his life. And he died a couple of years ago. Now, when I first came across it, he was a Catholic priest. I thought, no. It would have been, there must have been the other Phil Wilson that lived down there who was just a farmer, you see. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, it could have lived near him, you know. He could have been in a neighbouring area.
Yeah.
You never know. And then it struck me. Just imagine seeing it from the farmer's point of view. Imagine he's a Catholic. He's a... you know, believes in God, and he goes to church on Sundays, and he's a staunch Catholic, and it's a Sunday morning. He should be in church, but he's got to get his harvesting job done, and he has seen this thing hovering above him. There's an aeroplane stuck on it. He thinks it's the end of the world. Perhaps the thing is making a hell of a funny noise, and there's an aeroplane stuck on it, and there could be somebody at great risk. The pilot could be stuck in that plane and can't get away, and he's trapped. You know, that. What's going on? So I don't think he just happened to go into town the afternoon. He went to see his priest. He's had this shock, and he's gone to see the priest to tell him. That makes sense to me. And so I thought, well, maybe it was. Maybe he did go see the priest. Now, if Phil Wilson was still alive, he probably wouldn't be allowed to tell you the story because of, you know, confidentiality. Like,
yeah, of course.
People have confessions and stuff.
Yeah.
But I reckon the farmer could have been shocked with the back teeth by what he saw and gone to his priest to tell it. He wouldn't call the police. He's like, look, there's a flying saucer and there's an aeroplane stuck on it. The police would probably come and take you away to the loony bin. You know?
Oh, especially back then. And the thing is, like, we really don't know what Ian Bryson's world view was or anything like that. He could have been, like you said, he could have been a super, like, dedicated religious man. And this is something that breaks all the rules of what religion says should exist.
Yeah. So that's my theory anyway. So I had to write a final chapter to the book, which I haven't added to the book yet, and a brand new photograph of the missing plane came up to it straight after I published it, and that's a really nice photograph of the plane down at Turidon Airport in Victoria when it was brand new in 1968, the brand new plane. The photo was taken by a guy who was flying it at the time, a guy called Cam Kerr, who is still alive. He's he's getting on there. Anyway, I digress. But this is a fascinating story. And now, there's another person that Laurie talks about on the tape but doesn't mention the name, another one. So I thought, well, he had a good go so far. We're going to try another one. He describes the registration number of the plane. This is VHDSJ. He couldn't remember it in the interview. He didn't say what the registration number was. But he said, look, he said, I've got a friend who's a commercial pilot. And he said, and all commercial pilots get a list of airplane registration numbers. He said, now I asked my friend, he doesn't say who he is, but I asked this friend of mine if he could find out something about that registration of this missing plane. What happened was, they reissued that registration number to another airplane years after Fred wasn't, the plane was never found, and they reissued that registration number, which is VHDSJ, Delta Sierra Juliet. So, anyway, Laurie says, this commercial pilot friend of his looked up and found out that it's now the registration number for an airplane down in Victoria, which is an Oster aircraft. Now, you know the tiger moth? An Oster looks like the tiger moth, but with one wing. But the top wing, it looks like the Cessna, but it's made out of it's one of those wire and timber frame things with cloth on the outside, and they paint it with dope, just like a model aircraft. The dope stiffens it up and it becomes, airworthy, but it's material, it's cloth.
Mm.
The wings and the body. But it's like a tiger moth, but it looks like a Cessna. All right, very light aircraft, Well, I can't remember how I found this out now, but I did some running around and searching, and I found out that there was a guy who used to be working circuses around Australia, and his name was Gypsy Mick, right? And he bought this old Oster and he restored it, and then he got it registered, and that was the one that ended up with the name DSJ on it. And I have a photograph of that, the Oster with DSJ written on it, which is still out there now as a registered aircraft. So, yeah, it's no big deal or anything, but Laurie seemed to have a funny idea that there was something fishy going on there. Why would they have re-registered another plane with that number? But they did. It's just a matter of history. But I tracked this guy, Gypsy Mick, down. I rang him up about 10 years ago, and he said, I think he still had the Oster at that time, but he was thinking of selling it. But he said he pulled the engine apart and they completely rebuilt the engine. To restore that plane, and they did all the instruments and they fixed everything up and got it airworthy again. And then in the background, his wife is yelling out, and I did all the sewing. As she would have, because there was a lot of sewing involved in putting those airplanes together. They had to make new cloth for the wings and the body, and that had to be all sewn together and put on the aircraft, and then painted with dope and everything to make it airtight or watertight, and to make it tight, so like a drum. So I'm glad I had that conversation with Gypsy Mick. Gypsy Mick is, I can't remember his proper name. But anyway, I've got this photograph of his plane, and it's his DSJ now. So, anyway, so that was verified. That's another thing Laurie said that was verified. But he didn't tell us who this commercial pilot's name was. So I went to the tape, and right on the tape where Laurie is saying, and it's now on an Oster, play it backwards. And he says, that's, like he said, that's Phil Wilson. This one, he says, that's Simon Alanston.
And see what he could find out about it. And it's now on an Oster. And it's now on an Oster. That's Simon Alanston.
I've never heard of the surname Alanston ever before, but it's not unusual, I guess, that it could be an Alanston as a surname. So I googled Alanston from South Australia, and guess what came up? A reference from an Australian government gazette, which was talking about companies that had existed that were being deregistered because they'd expired or whatever. And it was a Launceston Aviation Services. And he was a commercial pilot.
Mm, that's very... There's a lot of strings that connect here, isn't there?
That blew me away.
Yeah, wow.
And yeah.
I find it so amazing that you've essentially had three home runs using this kind of reverse speech or this reverse play method just from the one interview. And, I mean, that you've got to look at this. Like, I'm always very skeptical about things like this, but you've done the research, you've looked into it, and everything's kind of just working out.
It's kind of weird. And I mentioned before that Bill had this phone call with Laurie before he went up there, and I've got the tape of that phone call, and I played back the part on that where in that conversation, Laurie said, oh, and it's now on an Oster. He said that again there, and it still comes back as that's Phil Wilson.
Wow.
It's now on an Oster. That's Phil Wilson. No, not Phil Wilson. That's Simon Launceston came out. Yeah, Simon Launceston. So I had to go back and listen to the entire interview about 10 minutes or something. And it's all gobbledygook except for the names.
Yeah, really?
Just the names popped into his mind at the right point, because that's when it would. When you're telling a story about somebody but you're not saying the name will go through your mind and it's on the tape in every case.
You know,
it's amazing.
I would say, like, this could have been just really dumb luck, or, you know, oh, George, maybe you're hearing things, or like maybe you're projecting a name into what you're hearing here, but
you'll hear it clearly on the tape for yourself.
But when it happens when it happens three times in a row,
that's three home runs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you said, it's astonishing, and for me to have experienced it myself anyway, that's why I tried it. The guy who discovered this was a guy called David Oates. He's from South Australia. And he got involved with the CIA in America. And I think they tried to shut him down because they started using it. I think they've used this in criminal cases where an accused person is asked a question and they've lied. But when they've played the tape back, they're actually saying, I'm not telling you. Things like that, you know. So it's pretty freaky. It really is freaky. But it's something to do with how our brain works, how language works. One of the theories that came up was that when we're learning language, when we're babies and we're learning to speak, if you get a baby, this just sounds like they're babbling, but if you play that backwards, it comes out like normal speech. Like you talk backwards first before you talk forwards. Something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's truly mind-bending, this kind of conversation, because I would not have thought that tapes getting played backwards would lead to such tremendous outcomes for this mystery. And the fact that you've gone through, you've found these people, you've had multiple people kind of... confirm that no, these are real people. I've spoken to them. I've had interactions with them. It really must just leave you kind of sitting there in awe of how other many other mysteries you could potentially dive into with this type of method.
Yeah, this guy David Oates started getting old tape recordings of previous presidents giving speeches, and he was playing them all backwards and hearing what they were really. You know, there's several cases like, you know, if I wonder, I didn't try this one. If you've got Bill Clinton saying, I did not have sex with that girl. And mind boggles what he might have been saying, thinking when he said that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but she gave me a good time. Yeah.
And I'll do it again.
Yeah. And, you know, politicians will say, oh, we're going to clean this mess up. And then they're really saying, no, we're not.
Yeah. Yeah, you know,
so,
I think you've really opened up a massive rabbit hole here, George, and I think a lot of listeners are going to go back and start playing a lot of episodes potentially backwards to hear what guests are saying, or who even knows like where this is going to go for UFO experiences going forward.
Who knows? Now, the other thing about these rock and rollers, you know, these heavy metal guys that have put these negative messages, they're just having a bad day and the thought's gone through their mind while they were singing.
Yeah.
And you play it back as you hear it.
Yeah.
You know? There was one other thing that Laurie said on the tape. It was all gobbledygook except for the names. There was only one other little tiny bit which didn't have any relevance to anything. It just sounded like Laurie said at one point, he said, "That's my fault. That's my fault."
Oh.
What? And I don't know what he was thinking, why it wasn't relevant to anything else. It just clearly said, "That's my fault." So he had that thought for some reason.
Maybe he was looking at someone fixing a muck-up or something like that, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, that was me."
Yeah, I don't know. But the funny thing was, the first one where he says Ian Bryson, he just says Ian Bryson. But the other two, in both cases, he says, "That's Phil Wilson," and he says, "That's Simon Alanston." Like he's reminding himself that that's who they were.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's exactly what that sounds like. Like he's talking about it and he goes, "Yep, that's Joe Smith. That's John Doe." It's really interesting.
I'm not a psychologist, but that would make sense to a psychologist, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. It's kind of like, that's an internal narrative. He's just talking to himself about this is what's going on.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff. It is very mind-blowing to have these types of conversations where you think this is just over-the-hill type of content. No one would really take that seriously, but you've actually taken this, run with it, and got some genuinely serious results. You've got people who've interacted with the names of these people. And I'm really interested to see if the listeners of our show, where they kind of go with this, because it was amazing how this thread kind of unraveled from the previous episode. It'll be interesting to see if anyone's got any interactions with these other individuals.
Even if someone comes up and says, "Look, I'm Ian Bryson's son.
Yeah,
I remember the story. And I've got a photo of the tractor with the rego number scratched on it. I can send you the photo."
Wouldn't that
be awesome?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
That'd be great.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
But none of this is going to help Fred or get Fred back. We don't know where the plane is. I'd love to know what happened to the plane. Where did it end up, you know? Is it in another solar system somewhere, or is it dumped in a forest somewhere? We just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's
interesting.
It is. And the thing that I find quite interesting is, like, the priest said he saw the... He saw the plane on the top of the paddock. And I wonder if he saw the plane disconnected from this UFO at that point, or if it was maybe just his perspective kind of playing tricks on him on how it looked.
I got the impression from what Laurie was saying was that just that the neighbor was asking him, "Why have you got a Cessna at the moment if you're not doing crop spreading? Why is it there?"
Yeah.
You know, and he said, "Well, I haven't." He said, "Well, yes, you have. I saw it. I've seen it." Yeah, it's funny. But look, the other thing is, so if you've been thinking that heavy metal rock and rollers are really evil people, well, they might have had an evil thought while they were singing, but that's just what happens.
Yeah.
It wasn't nobody. I mean, how would you engineer it as a sound engineer? How would you engineer a hidden message backwards in a song? You wouldn't know where to start.
No, not
how
at
could
all.
You do that?
Not
you know?
At all. And for it to even sound good playing the normal way, playing forwards, for you not to be able to pick it up. I think
it's a thought artifact that's been picked up. That's what I believe. That's not intentional.
That's a really good way to word it. You know, it's not reverse speech. It's a thought artifact. And I think that's a really good way to put that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, the guy that discovered this started marketing these little Sony Walkmans with reverse playback.
Yeah.
Microphones.
I tell you what, if anyone's got one of those at the moment, that'd be worth its weight in gold to hang on and just try it out yourself. It'd be interesting to see if any listeners of the show have had similar experiences with that or not.
But if you use Audacity, you can highlight any part of any speech and play it backwards. It's very easy. Audacity is an amazing program.
Absolutely, and it's free. You know, so for anyone listening, you can go get that app for free. It's really powerful and it's quite brilliant.
It's very, very good. So really, that's it in a nutshell. That's basically all. Was there anything else I wanted to say to you? I don't know. But if anybody, if we can just get a few more little loose ends tied up, it'd be wonderful. I'd love to go somewhere and see this tracker. It's still sitting there in a paddock somewhere with DSJ scratched on it. I'd love to see that. But
I tell you what.
It may never happen, you know. Not happen.
But it may be out there. And that's a genuine piece of UFO history right there. Oh, yeah. And I really do. I really hope we find something that kind of leads us further down that trail. But, George, it's been such a pleasure having you on again, mate. It's always fantastic to talk to you. And I'm really...
my pleasure, mate. I've enjoyed it. It's good.
Yeah, and
I'll have people get a kick out of this.
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will. I don't think people would expect this type of episode from I guess us. But I tell you what, it's super mind opening, and you know, it like I said earlier, it's opened up a lot of possibilities for a lot of names, and it'll be really cool to see if the listening public has any connections to those people.
But the only sad thing, this is what I was thinking, was in the back of my mind. Stanton Friedman was talking about when he was researching all the witnesses for the Roswell incident, and he was writing the book, The Roswell Incident, many, many years ago. He said that there were a lot of people that were still around that had witnessed it happening back in the 1940s. He said his research was a race against the Undertaker.
Yeah.
And how true is that? Because, you know, here we've got these names now, but they're probably not around anymore.
Yeah.
It's a real shame. But if anybody, any of their relatives, any relative of Ian Bryson, Father Phil Wilson, Phil Wilson, or Simon Alanston, somebody must have known Simon Alanston, you know, who was a commercial pilot and had some sort of business in aviation, said something about, buying and selling airline companies being bought and sold. But it was Simon Alanston had something to do with that. If anybody knows any of that stuff or can verify any of it, even anonymously, just to verify it, that'd be very helpful. But that's about all.
That
sort of wraps it up.
I think it's a really good way to wrap it up. And George, what I'll do is I might put your email in our show notes. So if anyone's interested in contacting you, maybe they can jump in the show notes and shoot you an email directly if you're open to that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. AussiePeacefrog@gmail.com.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you again, mate. And I know you had the hernia surgeries and they just kept popping up out of nowhere. So you've struggled through, and I really appreciate it, mate.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.